Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. It's August. It's really late in August. It's almost over. And the morning's almost over as well. So we are late as usual. And there's the lovely sound of chainsaws in the background.
Yeah.
Because our neighbor is cutting down God's creation.
Well, we have this like nice forested area between our house and our neighbor's house. It's not like it's not a forest, but it gives off the
feeling of being
a an arboreal kind of feeling. And we've loved it, and it's provided shade for our house in the summer, and a nice cool breeze coming into our windows. But nope, now we're gonna tear it all. We're gonna tear it all down. Yeah, I mean, so far the biggest trees are still standing, but some of the smaller ones have provided like nice.
Really, really nice
green are gone.
Right in time for the fall. So I've been saying for months that we needed to plant trees on our side of the fence for such a time as this. And I'm really sad to have been shown to be correct on that score.
Wow. I think you should stay inside today.
Yeah. So I don't attack our neighbor.
Well, we just like a week, 2 weeks ago, we were driving. 3 weeks ago, however long ago it was, another neighbor was cutting down a beautiful old tree, and it's just
that one. We drove down the road, and just it would
beautiful tree.
It's happening all over the neighborhood. People are just cutting like old growth trees everywhere.
And maybe there's some disease going on we don't know about, but you you made me stop the car, and the neighbor wasn't actually chopping the trees. The neighbor was paying a company, workers to do this. So you maybe stopped the car and you leaned out of the. I thought you were just going to ask a question, like what?
I didn't know this was a time.
You seemed very rational, like you were just going to ask information gathering question.
You
leaned out the window and you screamed at you. What are you doing?
I wasn't screaming.
Why are you cutting down that beautiful tree?
I was literally not screaming.
You screamed, and they were like they were embarrassed and they were shocked. They didn't know what to say. They said like. That's our job, man. This is what we do.
Well, you shouldn't. I wish I'd said you shouldn't. You should have a different job.
They have families they're trying to feed, and you yelled at them because they're doing what they're.
If you were offered the job of executioner, would you take that job?
It's not the same thing.
It's basically the same. The
person lumberjack
who cuts
is
down
like
the trees is the person who's like killing the life off the earth. I guess what's happening to me right now is I'm becoming a raving environmentalist.
You just don't like trees getting cut down.
There's a verse in the Bible about people who cut down trees without a good reason. I think those people are like go down to Sheol with their their throats become an open grave, and I have to read the entire Psalter today to find out that what happens to those people.
You should
very wicked
cut out the passage and then send it to our neighbor in an anonymous anonymous letter in her mailbox.
That's the
just the quote.
The thing is, I've been praying for a neighbor. The people who lived in that house got divorced tragically and just disappeared off the earth, and then so the house has stood empty because the new person has had an incredible number of health issues and people dying in her life. She's super friendly. So I've had warning because she's been telling me for like 4 days, I'm about to cut down all the trees. So I've been like wanting to be a really nice Christian person and friendly, and also like trying not to
yell at her.
You have no idea how much self-control and Christian love I've been showing.
And she's Jewish, and you were hoping one day to have her hear about Jesus, so it's a good thing you don't yell at her about
the
trees.
Yeah, okay, I'm not doing that. I'm just saying this is a really hard day for me, and you're right, I shouldn't go outside. So I feel like the cutting down of trees is a metaphor for the larger question of life itself. You know, like, I can't think of what it is right now. It's probably biblical. Trees and life, like the world tree, only make it about Jesus. So anyway, we weren't going to talk about trees this morning. That wasn't going to be the point of this podcast. But I'm like, my whole being is
You can't
racked
stop.
with
You can't
pain.
stop now. Just gonna keep going.
So, no, we were going to talk about the church because I realized this weekend that I've had a sort of a residual guilt in the last 20 years as we've lived in this town. And it's taken me a really, really long time to get to know people, for example, like my neighbor, because my whole being has been consumed with this Good Shepherd as a church not perishing into the ground, cut down at the root, as it were. And so I haven't done a lot of things I could have done, like join homeschool groups, or I can't even think of other things right now.
Yeah, you felt guilty about that. Like,
Yeah, I have felt
we
really
haven't done
guilty.
our civic duty. I should join the Rotary Club or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't feel that guilty, but you have felt.
I felt guilty,
Yeah.
and I so but then it occurred to me this weekend that the life of our church has felt precarious for most of the time that we've been here. And I imagine that's probably true for other kinds of people who work in churches or other kind of organizations. The thing could die at any moment. You know, like unless you're working all the time, and obviously your father is also working, the whole thing could, you know, you well, as we're seeing in American culture, it takes less than a generation for something to totally go off the face of the earth. Like, people are sad when their kids don't go to church. They don't really know what to do about it. And I'm reading this book, The Great Dechurching. People who were raised in church, their children don't go to church. And so that means that churches cease to exist. So,
When does morning prayer start?
no, don't ask me a question like that right now. Our child wants to know when morning prayer starts. So, it'll be sometime in September. You can always do morning prayer whenever you want because it's in the prayer book.
It's good to know.
I
Everyone wants
guess
to
our
know.
children
So,
aren't going to be praying
until
until it officially begins.
we take summer off from God.
It's like super precarious, just individual small churches, especially in the era, post-COVID era. It's not a done thing that your little church is going to survive. And so maybe it's like having a small business. Your whole being is bent on making it live. And it occurred to me this weekend, as Porch Fest was going on, that I have jettisoned a lot of things in my life that I probably could have done because I was pretty much just concentrated on making sure Good Shepherd survived and my children were alive.
Now, see, I know, like
I
I'm
feel immense
sure
amount of guilt for that.
that our parishioner, I'm sorry, our
Our
listener,
listener.
our parishioner, I'm sure that
One prisoner one. That's why it's going so badly. No, we
I'm
have
sure
more
that one
than.
of our listeners, if we have more than one, will be saying to himself or herself, "Well, that's because you're not trusting God, and you need to let,
Yeah.
you see, God's the one who builds the church, not you." And that's
Well, yeah,
true.
obviously.
That's That is true. However, I've noticed that when we that he tends to use other things besides just his bare power and
His raw glory.
right. I mean, so that's part of the reason that we work is because he uses us in that. And you know, it's interesting. I felt a little bit of a triumph recently because. Because we've been so precarious over the course of our career, I've always hated to go on vacation. I've liked it when I'm gone, but especially the earlier parts when we were losing the building, the first year after COVID hit, after the times of internal strife and turmoil, I've hated to go on vacation. And unfailingly, my two friends, who are now pastors themselves, who I was training up.
they would tell you,
you just need to trust God.
You really need to trust God.
And not be afraid. And God's going to take care of everything.
Everything's going to be fine.
And now they both have churches.
And they are terrified. They have to go to vacation in the next 2 months. And they're both terrified. It's so great. And I have been like, you know what, man? I'm praying for you.
I am praying for you. Because I know it's like. I know it's like. And I'm not going to say, I told you so. Because
you literally are doing that right now. What's the man version of Karen who leans out of the car and is like, I told you so. Well, and you know one reason why? There's so many reasons why the church is precarious. One reason is that it's people go away. A second reason is that every single person in the church is a sinner. And I don't think people including me. But I don't think people value enough the level, the degree to which sin can spread like leaven through the lump in a really, really quick fashion. And if somebody is going to decide to sin or do it accidentally, which everybody's doing all the time anyway, and it just, like, things can get really messy and terrible pretty quickly if you're not cutting down all your trees. Boy, it's really loud. Maybe we should close some more with.
They're now.
Oh, is that?
It's the wood chipper.
My gosh! So nobody gets to have this wood for their fireplaces.
Nope, they're putting in the wood chipper. I'll close the door. Ow.
So it takes it's like having a. I guess maybe church work is doing housework a lot, because as soon as you walk away from your sink, it fills up again and you got to do all the dishes again. And that's how keeping the people who are there going in one direction.
Yeah.
And making it so that you yourself are going in the right direction.
Right.
It takes a lot of constant energy and attention. And so when you go on vacation, nobody's paying attention. Well, God is obviously paying attention. God's paying attention. But sometimes God's will means that you lose everything.
We've gone on vacation.
Telling somebody to trust God is but his way of solving all your problems is by going to the cross.
Yeah, we've gone on vacation and come back and people have made just decisions with their lives that are not good in the course of just that month. And not, again, it's not because we're the savior. It's just like you say, sin. It's not that we're the saviors of the church, but there is a pastoral role that is necessary to keep people from wandering off in various directions. I mean, it's been so much better now that we actually have a full time assistant who's ordained, and it's been vacation is so much more relaxing now than it ever has been. So,
I think it all the thing that happened to me this weekend is I realized, much like people talk a lot about living in a post-Christian world or this once was a quote Christian nation and now it's not a Christian nation or whatever, and you have to live in the world now, you're living in Babylon. I've said all this stuff myself, but it really sharpened for me this weekend as I was wandering around Porch Fest. The reason that I think the church is precarious, but also you only can do one task. Like, if we moved here for this church, and in many ways, without knowing it, it was like moving to a village in Borneo, and your only task there is to make sure that people come in contact with the gospel, and probably none of them will be saved, and then you'll die. And that's what you did. But everything you would do would only be directed towards that one task.
Yeah.
And but because this was America, you know, we moved to Binghamton for the church. But we are still 21 years later only doing the church.
Right.
And I think if I would have 20 years ago said, well, in 20 years, what are you going to be doing? I would have thought, oh, well, yeah, I'm involved in this. I'm involved in that. I'm doing these other things. But it turns out that, no, I'm still doing exactly the same thing I was doing then. Like, almost exactly the same, with very little variation whatsoever, except for the number of children. And the church exists, so that's great. But there's been no alteration of task that surprises me. It's like we still live in Borneo, you know, and we're going to die here, and five people will have become Christian. So people say, oh, well, you know, it's a mission field. You know, everybody's a missionary where they are. But if you consider what it means to do a mission, it does mean that your whole task is only one thing, and it goes on being that only one thing until you die, and then you're dead.
Right.
And
I mean, I think we may also have like a different. It may be different if you go from if you spend 10 years in one church and 10 years in another church and 10 years in another church. That's fine. It's a great way of doing ministry if you want to do it that way. We decided not to do it that way, though. So I bet our mentality is a little bit different than pastors who go who change churches in the course of their ministry. Because we really, you know, this is Borneo. It was kind of like what your parents did going to Farkala. They basically burned their bridges and said, "We're going to stay here your dad said, I guess, until I get this language down." Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it took them 30 years. So you. It took 30 years in that village to get that thing done, and now he's.
But then you go on and like do maybe a variation of this. Not like, I mean, they're doing different work, but still about Bible translation. It's not like you go on and do another kind of midlife. Right. You know, okay, well now I'm going to be a fire engine chief. Like, you're still just doing that one thing. And so this, I guess what I haven't been able to quite nail down in the Christian nationalism debate. Is it a debate? It's not a debate.
Well,
some people want to be Christian nationalists and some people don't want to be Christian nationalists.
Some people don't know what it is, but they think they know what it is. And people don't know what it is. I'm sorry, do know what it is. And hate it, and others people do know what it is and love it. So it's great. It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. Well, I'm probably in the camp of somebody who doesn't know what it is. But I think I don't know what it is, one thing that it feels to me like people are saying, and maybe I'm totally wrong about this, but I didn't really like it when I would come back to the States in the 80s and 90s. And people would be focusing on the family or trying to achieve some cultural good with Christian morality and Christian principles, and not and the church was sort of tangential to that. And it feels like this is a recapitulation of that people want a Christian culture, which is obviously better than having another kind of culture. Of course, objectively.
Right.
Living in a Christian culture is going to be more ordered. It's going to be more peaceful. It's going to be nicer. We're going to have more nice things if it's a Christian culture. But I don't see how you get all of those things if you don't really make church and building the church and actual Christians in the church the center of your social goods.
I mean, I think that a Christian nationalist would say the church and the government should work hand in hand. Like the state should protect the church from harm. It should you know, kind of maybe the setup of what England was like from the Reformation going forward, where the king was, his task was to protect and defend the faith, and he certainly was in charge of making sure that England was a Christian kingdom, but it was, you know, he wasn't celebrating the sacraments or preaching a sermon or doing pastoral care or anything like that, but he was kind of the sword protecting the church. I think, you know, thinking of himself as a king who would need to enact Christian laws or laws that are consistent with Christianity. So, I mean, if that's all that's meant by Christian nationalism, sure. It's just when it gets into the, I mean, I think one of the things I thought reading Stephen Wolfe's book was, and I mentioned this at Stand Firm, was Stephen Wolfe redefined ethnicity, ethne. So it wasn't, it's an ethne, a nation, a people, isn't defined by ethnic heritage or ethnic blood. It's defined by culture, right? So you can be whatever your skin color is, if you share the same culture, same mores, the same understanding of the world, you're part of one people. Other Christian nationalists, though, are really do link it to blood, and they say every people group, every ethnic group, should have its own separate, distinct nationhood and not intermingle. And that's where I think the Christian nationalism goes way off the into the not good area, sinful area. But my disagreement with Wolf here, though, is I think the church is supposed to be that. I think the church is supposed to be the ethne. Everyone from different ethnic backgrounds come into the one culture of the church, and the church is where you find the oneness that God intended in the beginning brought about. We're all one people. We don't lose our ethnic or cultural background, but there's a new culture formed in the church.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the church should transform the culture in which it lives. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's like a directional thing. What do you start with? And the problem with where America is now is that everybody took for granted that the church was the culture. And they did not really concentrate themselves on building the church in such a robust and clear way that
it became central to
that it was lives. Central right. to the lives of actual Christians.
Right.
Whereas I think that many Christians through the 80s and 90s thought of church as, well, so what was most important was their own individual beliefs about God. And they could go to church, but they were not very members in corporate.
So much so, you know, we're not going to indoctrinate our kids to be Christians. We're going to let them make their own mindset.
And yeah.
We're going to make sure they get to soccer practice on Sunday morning. And, you know, but we really want them to have a personal relationship with Jesus and to know him and to be saved. But the church is tangential to that, not central to that. Because it's really the American sense of, I think the American sense of being your own person, your own individual person, utterly autonomous. And so your faith is just about you and Jesus, and you can take it. That means you're completely mobile. You're not bound to a church, you're not bound to a congregation. You can go any place you want to, and it's your religion is with
like
you.
Like the church is sort of this one thing, and so you can, individual churches are actually interchangeable.
Yeah.
Their distinctives of an individual congregation are not so essential to that. And then you being spiritually bound to those particular people it's important because you have your friends and whatever,
yeah,
But like you could easily pick up and move to another place
Right.
because your sense, because you're part of, quote, the church.
So then what happens over time, though, is that the emphasis on relationship with Jesus ebbs in a culture where
right.
the church isn't strong. So now you just, now you don't have anything. Now, like, kind of as we're talking, I'm reminded of Carl Truman's, you didn't like the article, I don't think, but Carl Truman wrote this article about
I thought it was a good article.
In the village church.
Yeah.
And his old, where he grew up, it was like a village. It was a village in Scotland or England, I can't remember, or Northern England, I can't remember.
Yeah, Northern England.
But, you know, the central things that everybody in the village, the two orbits, the centers that built up the community were the church, the Anglican church there, and the Baptist church, or two churches, and the pub. And nobody goes to those things anymore. And so
they're being sold off to the residents.
And the village is kind of just, it's not, there's no there anymore. There's no, nothing substantially holding it together.
So I guess it's just bemusing for me at this point for people to begin to come in and talk about Christian nationalism. That's what I keep coming back to that. Why are we talking about Christian nationalism? Like, I guess, in fact, I listened to an interesting podcast by somebody talking about how, you know, and I agree with this on some level, like the pastor's not the most important person. You need for every Ezra, you need a Nehemiah. You need a Christian governor to go along with your
right.
pastor. And everybody thinks you have to be a pastor. Okay, but that's a false, like that's a category already. You don't get a Nehemiah until everybody has come and like admitted that they needed Ezra. You know, like, well, I don't know. The whole thing is a bad metaphor for American politics. Like Israel going back into a land is nothing like what is going on here.
Right, but I mean, the state, the idea of state upholding Christian values in a nation. I like that idea. If that's what Christian nationalism is, I'm all for it. I don't have any problem with that.
I guess
that.
I'm just wondering why is that the conversation going on at all when clearly this isn't a Christian nation? And to get there, you would have to get to a Christian nation. What would be the steps? Everyone would have to go to their local church and invest themselves body and soul in the local church and be unwilling to move away from that church and be unwilling to spend themselves like the relationships that happened in that church would need to become so foundational, so strong that their children found their whole identities bound up with Christ in the church. And then you would begin to reclaim.
I mean, I'm all for, I think that's
Christianness.
Right.
And then eventually in like five generations, you might have a Christian.
Okay,
nation.
But see now, but the debate though is, and maybe we disagree about this, is the debate is, which we never disagree, but
of course we don't disagree.
There are some who are saying, like, the Christian doesn't need to worry about politics at all. You worry about preaching the gospel and building the kingdom, and don't get involved in. And if you try to get involved in politics, you just want power, right?
Well, yeah, and I would say we do want power, but how do you, you know, obviously,
but they would be saying the same thing you just said, like, okay, you need to just invest yourself in the church and it's preaching the gospel, not worrying about what's happening, and not trying to create a Christian nation.
Well, I guess the words "don't worry about" that's like a weird thing to say. Of course, you should worry.
Well, don't
about
focus
it.
On it. Like, if you focus on it, you're just trying to get power and wield it. And
I'm
that's
saying
not a Christian thing,
I'm not
right?
saying that you can't focus on it or worry about it or think about it. I'm saying that if Christians wanted to have a culture that was really Christian all the way down to its political level, they would have to make actual sacrifices for their local churches.
I agree with that.
And the even saying
at a
that
local
pits,
level, right.
that makes a false dichotomy. they pit, oh, well, you just want power. They pit the one thing against the other unnecessarily. Whereas you could say, for sure, you should become the mayor of your town, but you won't be a Christian mayor if you don't go to church and wrap yourself up in the warm, loving blanket of a local congregation that can't be shifted or moved off
its base. But you're not saying, like, oh, we shouldn't ban abortion because that's an attack, it's an attempt to get power for... you'd say let's ban it, right? You want the nation to run on Christian rules, right?
If you could get them,
okay,
for sure.
Okay, but to have a lasting sense of that, people need to be invested in their churches. Is that what you said?
Well, I would say there people need to be shaped by their churches, radically reshaped by their churches, or by the idea of going to church. And their idea of what it means to be a Christian would need to be altered really deeply in order to get the Christian nation that you want. Because if you just do it the way it's being done now, you still don't, even if you got rid of abortion and you had a quote Christian mayor, you wouldn't have a Christian nation because it's so underdeveloped. It's like,
I mean, those two things would be great.
They would be great.
Right. But
they wouldn't last very long. Right. They'd be just as precarious as it is right now.
Right.
Somebody else would come along and like undo it in 30 seconds.
Right. No, I agree with that. So this goes, I guess you're kind of coming full circle. I guess, that's how we've always thought of, even when I wasn't a pastor, I kind of thought of the church that way. That if I could live in a place that had a really good church and I could, this is before I was a pastor, but I was a Christian. When I first became a Christian, I thought, this would be great. The church should be the center of my life. I have friends. I can make friends there. I can have, I'm not an extrovert, but I can have social relationships there, which would be far better and more lasting and better for me than making my primary friend group at work or my primary friend group at school. Because at work or school, everyone's doing their own thing, going off their own ways. No shared sense of belief or faith. But then the church is the one place where you are bound at the deepest part of your soul with other people, and they're very different from you. But you're all doing the same thing together, and you're going to be doing it forever. Actually. So I do think that a lot. I wish more Christians had that idea about the church. A lot of them are just bitter about the church now.
That's the other thing. At the critical moment, when really, if you wanted to get everything that you want, if you really wanted a really healthy families and a good, a peaceful life, that's when evangelicalism is like taking off steam. And people are saying, oh, actually, if you go to church, you're actually gonna be, you're wicked, you're gonna lose all the good things that you have if you keep going to church. And people are believing that. They're just, if on the one hand they think that it's nothing and they don't need to go, that's one option. The other option is you're actually wicked if you do. If you really invest yourself in a church and you make personal sacrifices for it, then you're probably a bad person. You're perpetuating systemic injustice in the world. And I think that's really interesting phenomenon as well, where so to go now means you're going to be really accepting that you are a byword and a wicked, if you really shaped your life around a local congregation and made personal sacrifices to be there, the people in your life who saw you do that would think that you were actually bad.
Like what kind of, you mean, are you talking like non-believers? Are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about ex-evangelicals or people who've said that they're Christian. They've taken the whole like individual Christian thing to the extreme.
Well, I mean, it depends on the kind of church. Like if you devoted yourself to, I don't know, some...
Andy Stanley's church.
Huh?
Andy Stanley.
Andy Stanley's church. Or to, no, I think, Yeah, that one, or like the Universalist Unitarian Church that we passed by on our walk. What did it say this last week?
Oh man, it said something about goddess. Last week was great. Why church, or why
Yeah,
bother church?
why
Why bother?
bother, right?
This week it's about worshiping the goddess. Or so. We're gonna have to take a picture.
Yeah, worshiping the goddess. Why bother?
Yeah. Fixed it for you. Yeah. Well, so the sound of these machines is really distracting.
It's rattling
and
our heads.
So
I
think
we should, just
we should thank you all for listening so
as
much.
Long as you did.
And hopefully this will be listenable and we will actually post it. And I'm sure we'll have more and deeper and better thoughts next week. We will be heading over to Demotivations for a short minute if you'd like to follow us over there. So thank you for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.